This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me today. We'll have another hour of crime fighting this week, beginning with the adventures of Philip Marlowe and their story from October 1st, 1949, The Tale of the Mermaid. After that, it's Night Beat and The World All of His Own, their story from February 20th, 1950.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter of the prison of the grave. This started with a wreck and went from there to double murder over 75,000 bucks worth of glitter that nobody got in the end. Because I found out just in time what was fishy about the tale of the mermaid.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Tale of the Mermaid.
At 9:30, I was still in my office, tucking in the loose ends on a report, while I listened with half an ear to the fabric of city sounds rising from the street below. Fabric ripped suddenly by tires clawing concrete. The shattering crash that followed brought me to my feet. It was a traffic accident, and a bad one. I ran to the window, but it had happened around the corner out of sight from my office. So I watched others run for it and remembered grimly that every 30 seconds, somewhere in the country, a thing like that happened. And one out of every 16 minutes was fatal. I wondered who had been chewed up in a chromium meat grinder this time as I listened to first the police, then the emergency ambulance, and finally, the scavenger truck cleaned the wreck off the street. After that, I went back to my report again and tried to forget about it. But an hour later, that same accident came back into my office.
Mr. Marlowe?
Yeah?
This is Corey Riggs.
Yes, Miss Riggs?
I'm a nurse at the Warwick Emergency Hospital.
Uh-huh.
About an hour ago, a man named Stanley Ott was brought in, and he's been calling for you.
For me?
He was badly injured in an automobile accident on Coenga on his way to your office.
Wait a minute. Who did you say this was?
I'm the nurse assigned to Mr. Ott at the hospital. I just got off duty, and I had to wait until I was relieved before I could call you.
I see. Well, look, Miss Riggs, I'd like to help in any way I can, but it's 9:30.
Mr. Marlowe, Mr. Ott gave me $250 and told me to call you.
Yeah, I know, but
and he said that I should give you $200 and keep the $50 for myself.
Oh, fine. Now I get clients by proxy.
I beg your pardon?
Nothing. I'll be right over, Miss Riggs. I didn't know anyone named Stanley Ott, and I felt a little like an ambulance chaser, but I was only 15 minutes from getting to the emergency hospital. As I walked up the ambulance ramp, a smart-looking brunette came toward me.
Mr. Marlowe? I'm Corey Riggs, the nurse who called.
Oh, hello. Can I see him now?
It wouldn't do any good. You see, he went into a coma a few minutes after I called.
Oh, too late, is that it?
Let's move away from the door, shall we?
Sure.
You see, Mr. Marlowe, before he went into the coma, Ott wasn't rational. He was raving.
About what sort of thing?
About you and a girl.
Oh?
As near as I could make out, she's supposed to meet someone tonight at 2 o'clock and collect $75,000.
It's quite an assignment. Who's the girl?
I don't know. All Ott said was something about a plaid coat as identification.
Plaid coat, huh? Any idea what he wanted me to do? Chaperone, maybe?
No, he kept pleading, stop her, stop her. She can't do it. So I'm sure that he wanted you to prevent this girl from keeping that appointment. For some reason, it seems absolutely imperative to him.
Where was this 2 o'clock meeting supposed to take place?
I have no idea.
Oh, fine. So it boils down to this. A girl we don't know in a plaid coat is meeting someone we don't know at a place we don't know at 2 a.m. The man who wants me to prevent it is in a coma and can't talk. Can he say anything else, Miss Riggs?
He just kept saying, you've got to help me, Marlowe. It's life and death.
You know, we can stir up an awful hornet's nest poking our noses into 75,000 bucks worth of business we know nothing about. I doubt that we can do any good anyway, because we don't have enough to go on. If he said anything else to even point in the right...
Oh, Marlowe.
What?
Oh, wait a minute. He mumbled something once about a Constantine.
Constantine?
Yes, it's some pier.
What is it, a boat?
I don't know. But at least it's a lead, isn't it?
Anything else?
No.
Okay, where can I reach you?
I'll be at my quarters, Crestview 5781.
5781. And keep track of Stanley Ott's condition, will you? If he comes out of it, talk to him. We've only got 3 short hours. I'll call you, Corey. I felt a little weird as I left the hospital because I was traveling on strictly second-hand information as to what had gone on in a delirious mind. But in spite of that, there was still enough coherence in what Corey Riggs told me to make a case. My first stop was a phone booth and a call to the police, where I found out from the accident report that Stanley Ott was 30, unmarried, small-time lawyer, and an L.A. resident with a clean police record. My next call was the harbor master's office at San Pedro.
Constantine? No. Don't remember no vessel by that name, sonny. Just a minute, I'll look her up in the registry. Let's see. Constantine. Only one listed is a 4-masted schooner sunk off Pirates Point near Monterey in 1870.
A little before my time.
Not the one, eh?
Not the one. So I tried the Coast Guard.
No fishing boat called Constantine on this coast, mister.
That was followed by a check of yacht harbor at Long Beach, negative. And a call to the pleasure boat anchorage at Santa Monica.
No Constantine registered here, sir.
After that, a long, futile reconnaissance of the waterfront from one end to the other. It left me 1 solid hour later out at the end of a tottering, almost abandoned concession pier in Venice. Swearing in blind frustration at the black, seething ocean below, I was licked.
Ain't thinking of jumping in, are you, pal? Hey, you look like you lost your best friend.
I did, Buster. Me. I was sunk with a Constantine in 1870.
Constantine? You know him, too, huh?
Him?
Yeah.
You mean Constantine's a guy?
Sure, pal. There's a shack there. Wait till the beacon light comes around again. See that?
Well, I'll be. Prince Konstantin Chevnov. Occultist, palmist, and medium. Personal consultant by appointment only.
Yeah, but that's a fake.
No fool.
All them guys. He owes everybody around. Even at the Ziggy. Me. For 1 buck, and that's something. But he's a genuine Russian prince. Hey, where were you going?
Have a look. Prince Konstantin Chevnov could be my boy.
He wouldn't want you nosing around here, pal.
That's too bad. Does he live here?
Yeah, in the back. He runs his pitch in the front where all them green curtains are. Right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I suppose he always leaves his door unlocked, huh?
What? What? Who? Hey, that's kind of funny.
Yeah, I'll bet. There'll be a light switch here someplace. Oh, yeah. Now let's see what... Oh.
Holy catch. Goodbye, mister. Goodbye.
The little wharf rat darted through the door and scampered away into the darkness. I went over to the body, face up on the cheap, gaudy carpet of the seance room. He was about 35 in a substantial gray business suit stained red in front where the bullets had gone in. His wallet was missing. There was no other identification on him. His gray, snap-brimmed hat was spilled a few feet away, so I picked it up to look for initials and found instead a small file card stuck into the sweatband. Typed at the top was the heading, The Mermaid. Owner Otis Van Owen, only relative Evelyn Van Owen, niece. Mermaid stolen November 12, 1948. Insurance paid in full. In ink, Van Owen died August 1949, and under that in pencil, Constantine Chevnov, Venice Pier, and Louis Paradise, 913 Seacrest Road, Pacific Palisades. It took 20 minutes to find 913 Seacrest. When I stopped and got close enough, what I saw through an open window made Constantine trap I just left look as reliable as a post office by comparison. It was a miniature Egyptian temple, exotic and dainty, sickening lushness of red velvet and yellow silk. And in the center of the room was a bloated little man, balancing a long cigarette holder in one hand, while he simpered into a honey-colored French phone in the other.
Was an arrangement.
I moved up quietly until I could hear him.
A sentimental agreement. That is right, Evelyn. Your Uncle Otis and I were the best of friends for years. Well, thank you, child. Where are you now? Oh, the servitor. Good, good. I advise you to stay there until a few minutes before two, and you will not forget to wear a plaid coat, just to be sure I won't make a mistake.
What is it, bud?
What? Not you.
Careful now. Sudden noises like this gun going off upset Mr. Paradise.
I am looking forward to meeting you.
They find so interesting inside.
Oh, yeah. Conversation. About the mermaid, probably.
Uh-oh. Glad you dropped that one, bud, because I'd bump you for a nickel, say nothing to 75 G's.
I don't talk things over with punks. I reserve it for the head man. Go do something about it.
Okay, bud, I will. Go on, move. We're under the door and inside. Mr. Paradise gets some kind of kick out of stepping on big guys like you.
The gopher face shoved his automatic into the small of my back and marched me inside where the air was thick with cheap incense. The bloated little king with a long cigarette holder had stepped out. But he came back fast when the gopher called him.
Hey, Mr. Paradise.
He stared at me from across the room and his nostrils flared for an instant. And he simpered again and sidled toward me. The gopher dug at my spine with his gun.
Well, now, what is this you did?
Snooper, Mr. Paradise. Caught him outside peeking in the window.
Oh, it is a bad night for snoopers. Who are you?
Name's Marlowe.
And the business?
Snooping.
He knows about the mermaid, Mr. Paradise.
He does he? How much do you know? Speak up.
She's got a fishtail instead of legs.
You dare to joke?
Don't you!
Stand here and take it, big man. You asked for it. Make a move and I'll drop you.
I know what you are, Marlowe, but not how much you have found out. Now tell me, because the next time I slap you, it will carry more weight than my bare hand, I promise.
You have company, Paradise.
Did I get it?
No, you keep this baboon under control, Rudy. I will answer the door. Oh, Prince! Come in.
Paradise, what do you mean? How far do you think you can go with my reputation? Do you want to get me hanged?
Wife, what is the matter, Constantine? You are upset.
Upset? I'm out of my mind. Oh, what a shock. And such a stupid thing for you to do.
What are you raving about?
He found that body on his front room floor, right, Constantine?
Exactly. Precisely. And what is more, I did not put it there. Of all the places in the world, why did you pick this one? Paradise. Who is this? This stranger here?
If you would close your mouth and open your eyes more often, Prince Constantine, you would not be the nervous wreck you are. This is Mr. Marlowe, another snooper.
Another one. Paradise, listen to me. It's better if we quit. It's better if we don't try it tonight. It's out of hand. I don't like it now. We should get away and come back next year and do it.
You jellyfish, there's nothing to worry about now. Insurance investigators often work in pairs. Is that not so, Marlowe?
Your pitch, round man. You don't need any help from me.
You are so right. Rudy and I caught the first at your place, Constantine. Now we have the second one here. That is all there are. The danger is over. It's clear sailing from now on.
Yeah, but what about that cadaver you had the audacity to leave lying in my seance room? What about that?
Forgive me, Constantine. That was a necessity. I am sorry. Now, listen.
Hey, Rudy. This go on all the time?
Yeah. Ain't it awful?
And think of all the champagne, caviar, and bricola, strong enough you can buy with the mermaid.
I don't care.
Just a bracelet, but at the same time, it is $75,000 worth of diamonds and platinum.
Oh, da-da. Oh. Okay, Paradise, I trust you. Now, we go, huh? My Gnaldo.
Yes, Prince, Gnaldo it is.
Hey, Mr. Paradise. What should I do with the big boy here?
Yeah, you're kind of leaving a loose end around, aren't you, Fatty?
If I had the time, Marlowe, I would beat the arrogance out of you a little chunk at a time. Rudy.
Yeah?
You've got no initiative, but you do have imagination. So use it. Goodbye, Marlowe.
In just a moment, the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first, it's a big break in entertainment for you and a big break in a career for some talented youngsters when Horace Heidt's original youth opportunity program opens the door to fame and fortune every Sunday evening on CBS. Popular Horace Heidt is host to young folks who want to break into show business. And every Sunday evening, one lucky winner does break in to his delight and your listening pleasure. Yes, for music, comedy, thrills, and all-around fun, listen to Horace Heidt Sunday evenings. another great CBS show heard over most of these same stations.
Tune in this fall for the shows that you love best of all.
Listen carefully.
Here's the address.
It's CBS, CBS.
Now with our star, Gerald Moore, we return to the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, The Tale of the Mermaid.
When Louis Paradise hesitated at the door, snarled the suggestion that this henchman use his imagination in disposing of me, and left in lockstep with the white Russian screwball, I got the point. Even if I'd missed it entirely, one look into Brother Rudy's eyes would have done the trick. There were no pupils, just slits of lethal viciousness. Windows to his warped little mind where I could practically see the montage going on. It ran from ancient thumbscrews by candlelight up to a generous beating by street lamp with brass knucks. I felt a cold knot grow in the pit of my stomach as Rudy, with a cannon in his hand, pointed at my head, started toward me. And from someplace outside, I got a break. Two romantic cats. Rudy spun toward the sound.
One chance to a customer, Rudy, and you miss.
Kill you, Marlowe. I'll blow your head off.
Not tonight, gentle soul. Give it to me. I don't want you to hurt yourself until we've had a chance to talk. That's it. Now, lie down.
I knew there was some reason why I like cats, their voices. Okay, Rudy, you've had enough rest. Now, let's get back to business.
Now, wait a minute.
Come on, get up. We're going to talk.
Wait, hold it, please. No reason for any more rough stuff. I'll cooperate.
That's better. Where did Paradise and his highness head for? The Gnazdo, where is it?
I don't know.
Come on, you said there was no reason for rough stuff, remember?
Ow! Yeah, I remember. That Gnazdo, that's something I never heard of.
An unhappy coincidence, Rudy. It's one thing I'm interested in.
Yeah, wait. Must be something else you want to know. Something else I could tell you that... Hey, what are you going to do?
You mean you can't tell, Rudy? That's
keep
funny.
Away.
All it takes is a little imagination. Out of the way, I started through the place looking for all important answer to what was the Gnazdo. The 20 minutes of turning drawers and closets inside out revealed nothing more exciting than Louis Paradise's address book, first names only, and a picture of a girl named Toodles who belonged to the Roaring Twenties, and by this time should have caught a death of cold. His sister, no doubt. But no lead on the Gnazdo. So on the slim chance that my client Stanley Ott might already be back in this world and able to help, I got outside into my car and drove to the first drugstore where, after checking the phone books under everything from bars to bathhouses for a Gnazdo and getting no place, I called Corey Riggs at the nurse's home.
No, Marlowe. Stanley Ott's still unconscious. I just talked to the night nurse on his floor. They expect him to come out of it soon. Why? What happened?
Well, it's too much to explain now, Corey, but that girl, the one in the plaid coat, I found out that her name's Evelyn Van Owen and she's staying at the Surf Hotel. Now, see if that much checks with Ott when he comes to, will you?
All right.
Oh, also, there's a diamond-studded item called the Mermaid, which accounts for that $75,000 he mentioned. Now, Constantine and the Pier now equal a phony Russian prince who runs a spook palace out on the old Venice Pier. Now, you got all that?
Uh-huh.
Good. Now, look, honey, listen real hard. Before Ott passed out, did he by any chance say the word Gnazdo?
Gnazdo?
Yeah.
No, what does it mean?
I don't know. I think it's the name of a place.
Oh, have you checked the phone book?
Yeah. It's no dice, Corey. Also, I checked one Mr. Louis Paradise, who you might mention.
Marlowe, wait a minute.
What's
hold
the matter?
The wire, will you? There's a girl here, one of the nurses, who's trying to tell me something.
Oh.
It's the Gnazdo, Marlowe. Shh, wait a minute. She knows something about it here. It's Rosemary. You talk to her. Hello.
Hello.
You want to know what Gnazdo means?
Yeah.
Well, it's Russian, like Pashla Maya Gnazdo.
Oh, that's, well, what does it mean in English, Rosemary? Fast, please, it's important.
Well, that means, let's go to my place. Gnazdo's the word for nest. Sort of like cozy apartment or cottage.
My place, nest. You sure of that?
Well, I'm positive. I was an army nurse in the war, and I spent 2 years in Germany after the shooting part was over. 2 years, a half a block away from the Russian zone.
That's close enough. Thanks a million, Rosemary.
I don't mention it. Here's Corey.
Oh.
That do it, Marlowe?
Yeah, I think so. At any rate, unless I'm way off base, it's where both the Mermaid and all parties concerned are going to rendezvous at 2 a.m. That's less than a half hour from now. The Prince's place on the pier. I want to be early, so goodbye, Corey. I'll call again when I know more. Yeah, and give my everlasting love to girlfriend Rosemary. She all is show a peach. There were still a few parts missing, the way there always are. As I drove fast for the old Venice Pier and added as I went along, it came out something like the theme of paradise and Prince Whatchamacallit ready, willing, and able to pay 75 grand for a piece of jewelry that one Evelyn Van Owen now owned. A mermaid, which according to the data I'd found on the insurance man's body, had once been stolen from Evelyn's late uncle. But I left it there when my rearview mirror said a long gray sedan that had been tagging me discreetly for the last three blocks. Now being indelicate about it and closing fast. The driver was old pal Rudy, and as he came abreast, he headed for me.
All right, you're okay. You're okay, Mac. Don't you worry about a thing. We'll have you out of there in a minute. Hey, can't you knock out that horn?
Knock out the horn, sir. What do you think we're trying to do? It ain't so easy getting my hand past the squeezed hood.
You know?
Oh. Oh.
Well, that's better.
Hey. Hey, cabby, what'd I hit?
Well, in order of their appearance, ooh, Mac, your car into a telephone pole and then you into your dashboard.
Oh, yeah, you're sure lucky you bounced off the curb first, Mr.
Okay.
Slowed you down plenty. Oh, hey, here comes the ambulance.
Yeah.
Look at the roll.
Not for me. I'm all right. Hey, come on, cabby. Help me out of this, will you?
Sure, that's what we're trying to do. But don't you worry, the ambulance ain't for you. It's for the guy that sideswiped you and then tried to get away. I seen what happened, and I went after him in my cab. He turned into a dead end, no less, trying to shake me. Ooh, is he a mess? But I guess he'll live all right. Hey, what's he got against you anyhow, Mac?
Just my life. Listen, your cab's still all right?
Sure, there's someplace you gotta go.
There is. The old Venice Concessions Pier, my friend, and the sooner the better. Come on. Maybe my head against the dashboard was exactly what I needed. Because right then and there, the method of Rudy's handiwork made me think of an angle that I'd neglected almost completely. My unconscious client had not wanted me to get the mermaid or the 75,000 bucks, but to stop Evelyn from keeping her rendezvous, which at this point I figured could mean but one thing. It was exactly 2 o'clock when the cab slammed to a stop near the pier. I piled out and ran onto the empty, fog-dampened planking that led to Prince Constantine's shack. Nothing but mist moved over the pier. No unusual sound broke the pattern of waterfront noises. But I thought momentarily that I was still in time to prevent what Stanley Out somehow knew was going to happen. That Louis Paradise and his eccentric sidekick intended to get the mermaid from Evelyn, but pay off in only one way. I ran to the rear of the shack on stilts and got close to the half-open door where I could see and hear and found out just what I'd expected. In the storeroom spread out and very still on the oil-soaked planks that were a makeshift floor was the lifeless form of a girl who, according to the plaid coat she wore, was the late Evelyn Van Owen. And kneeling close to her gun in one hand, the sparkling mermaid in the other, was her executioner, Louis Paradise. Next to him, his number one boy, Prince Konstantin Chevnov,
Paradise,
not very happy.
A fool to shoot her was stupid.
Yes. 75 grand, stupid. Or would you have preferred that I pay Miss Van Owen in cash? I had to kill her.
Yes, Paradise, but the gun, so much noise, we can't afford to attract that man.
The two cops is on hand, I should say not, Prince. They don't try it, Louis.
The mermaid. The space between the boards. The mermaid. Oh.
It's in the water, Chevnov. Shame.
Yeah. Yes, it's a shame. We did so much, worked so hard.
Yeah, killed so often. Gonna run for it, Your Highness?
Run? Nah. Nah, Paradise is dead there. Without Paradise, I am not so brave. I will do as you say.
Keep quiet. Don't make a sound, Chef. No, we got company.
Rudy,
quiet!
Pardon me. Can you please tell me where Louis Paradise can be found?
It's Louis Paradise there. Who are you?
Evelyn Van Owen.
What?
Evelyn
Van Owen?
Oh.
The woman who was supposed to sell the mermaid to Paradise?
That's right. But on my way over here, just after I left my hotel, somebody struck me, knocked me out. Took my coat there and my purse and ran.
Your purse with the mermaid, no doubt.
Yes.
And that, Miss Van Owen, makes this angle shooter here. Yeah. The very dead nurse, Corey Riggs. Let's get out of here.
Nothing to worry about, Miss Van Owen. Stanley's going to be all right.
Oh, I'm so happy.
Why is it women always cry when they're so happy?
I don't know, but it's effective. Well, I'll run along now. Goodbye.
Bye, Doctor.
Bye. You know, Mr. Marlowe, when I was in Stanley's room with the doctor, Stan said he didn't lose control of his car at all when he had that accident in front of your place. He was run off the road
by a gray sedan, I know. Because I had the same treatment. One of Louis Paradise's henchmen, Rudy. Where's your car, honey? I'll walk you out.
Just outside the front door.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, did I tell you why Rudy roughed him up?
Yes, in a way. You see, I told Stanley about the deal with the mermaid, and he thought it all sounded a little phony.
Can't understand why.
He's a lawyer, you know.
Ah, legal type mind.
He said meeting anyone at 2 a.m. was ridiculous, so he investigated as much as he could. Because he was worried about me. We're engaged, you
know.
No,
I never would have guessed.
And he found out that Mr. Paradise was a fence. And Stan said that probably he never intended to give me the $75,000 for the mermaid at all. That they intended to kill me.
Here we are. Tell me, why did you get in touch with Paradise in the first place?
I was just following Uncle Otis's instructions. Mm-hmm. He gave me the mermaid when he was dying. And he told me if I wanted money to sell it only to a Mr. Paradise, but not to mention it to anyone.
Your uncle faked a robbery, collected the insurance money, and then let you sell the mermaid to a fence, huh? It's lucky for you that Nurse Corey Riggs was clever. She put together just enough of Otis's gibberish to know that there was something good to be had, and then got me to unravel it for her.
She got killed taking my place.
When she tried to collect your $75,000.
Yeah. Oh, here's my car.
Well, Evelyn, for a little while you were a rich woman. Now it's all gone. How do you feel?
Well, I'm alive and in love.
Yes, well, that answers my question. Good night, baby, and good luck. When I left the hospital, I wandered back to the old Venice Pier in Prince Constantine's Gnazdo. It was 5 a.m. and the police had finished cleaning the place up. But the word had gotten out. A crowd had gathered. They always do. Curious, restless, sordid crowd, equipped with everything from grappling hooks to homemade diving helmets. All climbing over each other for a chance to fish for the mermaid. She who had brought death to 3 people, injury to 2 others in the course of 1 night. And suppose they found her. What then? A lot of glittering pieces of white coal set in a metal frame we call precious. Look at the sucker's grab. That's all, Marlowe. Home and to bed.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, and are produced and directed by Norman MacDonald. Script is by Mel Donnelly, Robert Mitchell, and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Rita Lynn, John Daner, Michael Ann Barrett, Wilms Herbert, Junius Matthews, Herb Vigran, and Mark Lauren. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. Be sure and be with us next week when Philip Marlowe says...
It started with a terrified woman lost in a maze of memories she couldn't explain. And waiting for her outside an open window was death.
Another show has joined the CBS Sunday Night Parade. It's The Contented Hour, starring Buddy Clark and featuring the finest in popular and semi-classical music. It comes to you on most of these CBS stations for the first time tomorrow night, making its debut on CBS the same night as Red Skelton and Edgar Bergen and Charles McCarthy. Yes, this fall, you hear them all on CBS. This is Paul Masterson speaking. Now, stay tuned for Gangbusters, which follows immediately over most of these same CBS stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Night Beat.
Hi, this is Randy Stone. I cover the night beat for the Chicago Star. You know, stories start out in many different ways. Tonight's story started when I walked into a nice little guy's private world and it blew up right in my face.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
When the streetcars and the subways spill out their thousands of tired ones who scurry off into a million directions to find home, that's when my job begins. I start walking, looking for my story so that you can read about it in your morning newspaper and feel good because it didn't happen to you. Tonight I got my story fast, just walking down Madison Street, west, away from the center of things. I kept walking past the shooting gallery, the nickel arcade with the peep shows and the fortune-telling machines, the jukebox taverns, Madison Street, the quick route to happiness with the world's worst hangover. And then straight ahead of me was Pop Gordon's training gym. That's where the public pays 30 cents to watch fellas training to beat each other's brains out. You know, when I got inside, it looked like just one of those fights. And then I heard one voice over the others. It was a voice I knew.
Somebody call the cops and get that punchy loon out of here.
You yellow, stupid bum fella, you laughed at me.
What's the matter, Pop?
Randy.
Yeah.
This crazy owl's gone clear off his rocker.
Well, that's Billy.
Yeah. Somebody call the cops.
Wait a second, Pop. He's all right.
Sure. Listen to him.
I'll kill you. Anybody lays a glove on me gets killed. You laugh.
One place for a loon like that in a bughouse. I'm going to get the cops and have this owl tied up.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Pop. Let me talk to him.
Randy, stay away from that lug. Five of us couldn't hold him.
He knows me.
Randy, the guy's gone nuts.
Yellow, like I said, everybody's scared of getting the same.
Hey, Billy. Billy.
What?
Hi, Billy. How's it going?
You coming in with me?
No, sure. Make me a big man getting into the same ring with a champ.
Well, that's me, champ. And you're a tope-head bum.
Well, that's a thumbnail description if I ever heard one.
Admit it. The truth. A tope-head bum. Admit it.
I admit it, Billy.
Yeah, but you don't mean it. You're laughing at me like the rest of them. You're laughing at me.
Billy, I never laughed at you in my life.
You're laughing? Well, I'll show you what happens to anybody who laughs at Billy the Kid.
As the world flew away in all directions, I dimly remembered how the sports writers used to speak so respectfully of Billy's fast left hand. But brother, if they knew what I just found out about his right. When the fog finally cleared, Pop Gordon was bending over me, and there were a lot of other faces, too. But I didn't see Billy when I stood up.
You okay, Randy?
Oh, this is being okay. I don't want any part of it.
He slugged you, but good.
Where is he?
I took off before the cops come. Took off before anybody could grab him.
I don't blame him.
I let that bum come in the gym and sit around. Everybody else pays 30 cents but him. I let him free. What's he do, huh? What's he do? He busts loose. He blows his top.
But why? What happened to Billy?
I don't know. Tonight I catch him putting a bite on my customers. Two bits here, a dime there.
Billy was panhandling?
Sure. Like I said, I didn't like it, so I tell him.
And then when?
I don't know. I'm over at the other side of the gym. I hear somebody laugh, and the next thing I know, the owl's swinging like a windmill. He's going to kill everybody just for being around. He ought to be tied up.
Uh-huh, just like that, huh?
Yeah, he ain't safe.
What do you want, the Black Maria to come around, cart him away like a load of rubbish?
Yeah, but for his own good.
Oh, Pop. Yeah. Remember when he was champ? He packed him in every club where he fought. He had a dollar or $5 for anybody who held out a hand.
So? What are you getting at?
Well, now he's got no one, Pop, and now he's out in the cold.
Yeah. Oh, I'll forget the cops. But we still got to put him away.
Well, all right, sure, but let's do it as painless as possible. I'll keep him with me tonight, and then tomorrow...
You going after him?
Yeah, which way to go?
Straight up the streets, but watch out, Randy. He blows his lid.
Yeah, I know. Don't worry. I don't want any rematch. I'd like to know why he blew his lid in the first place, and my jaw in the second place. I'd known Billy a long time. A sweet, gentle guy who always seemed to be living in a world all of his own. A world that nobody else knew about and cared less. And now he was in trouble. In his mood, he might hurt someone, or worse, he might get himself hurt. I must have walked for half an hour before I finally spotted him. He was standing on a corner. I stopped and watched him for a couple of minutes. I watched his hesitant and embarrassed panhandling. Then I walked over to him slowly. Hello, Billy.
What? Oh, hiya, Randy, old pal, hiya.
You want some company?
Oh, sure.
Good.
Randy, where you been keeping yourself? I ain't seen you for a couple of weeks.
You haven't seen me for a couple of weeks?
Well, I thought maybe you'd forget an old pal, huh?
No, you're not the kind of a fellow one forgets, champ. Mm-mm. Now, what was the trouble back at the gym?
Gym? What gym?
Pop Gordon's.
Pop's place?
Yeah.
Well, let's go. I gotta help Pop. He's a good Joe, you know. He never charges me nothing.
Wait
to
now,
get
hold
in
on a second, Billy. Hold on.
Yeah?
Weren't you at the gym tonight?
Oh, no, not tonight. I've been here.
And you didn't massage my chin?
You giving me a rib? Well, what you looking at me for like that, Randy?
Forget it, Billy.
You was just ribbing, huh?
Oh, sure. I'm just kidding.
I like ribs. Not giving a hot foot, nothing like that. But funny ribs that don't hurt nobody.
Oh, sure. Can I ask you a $64 question?
Well, sure not. You can ask me anything, Randy, anything.
I saw you a minute ago, Billy.
What?
I never seen you ask for a touch before.
I ain't never gonna do it no more, but... But, Randy, I got it tonight. I got to get a few bucks. Maybe 15. I already got $2. Maybe...
Why do you need $15?
What? I got to get a new suit.
A new suit? What's so special about tonight, Billy?
Well, there's something I got to do. It. I just got to do it, Randy. I got to have 15, but... Hey, them's cars.
Hey! Is that you, Randy?
Yeah. Oh, Sullivan!
Yeah.
Randy... Don't let him pick me up for panhandling, please.
No, I won't,
please,
Billy. Now, you wait here. Wait here. I'll be right back.
Yeah.
That's Billy back there, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right, Sullivan. Why?
Heard you had a little trouble with him back at the gym. Mm. Maybe we ought to put him in the tank for the night, keep him out of trouble, huh?
Look, Sullivan. Huh? He's going away tomorrow for a long time.
Oh, like that, huh?
Yeah, that's it. This is his last night out.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
Good.
It's the way I do it myself. I'll see you around, Randy, but keep an eye on him.
Yeah, I'll watch him like a hawk. Thanks, Sullivan. So long.
What they say, Randy, they ain't going to pick me up for mooching on it. They ain't going
to... No, of course not. Billy, how'd you like to come to my apartment for a while?
Oh, I can't. I told you, I got to get 15 bucks.
Well, we'll talk about it.
Well, I got to get it tonight. Now, I got to get a new suit because...
Yeah, go on. Why?
I can't be wearing this crummy rag when I see her. Not when I see her.
I didn't know what he meant. But whatever had made him go crazy at the gym, whatever had made him hit me was tied in with her. Who she was, I didn't know, and I wasn't sure that he knew. I finally talked him into going to my place, and when we went in, I watched that slow, gentle smile come over his face.
Hey, this place is A number one.
Yeah.
Sit down, Billy.
I ain't got much time.
Just a couple of minutes.
Yeah, okay. I'm awful tired, Randy. Seems like a lot of things has happened tonight, you know. I'm kind of tired.
Sure. Want a drink, Billy?
Oh, no. I never touch it, you know that.
Yeah. And you never panhandled before.
Well, I ain't going to do that no more just tonight. I never bummed off of nobody. I paid my own way. Come anything, I paid my own way.
Yeah, that's why I want to know why you're putting the bite on people tonight.
I ain't going to tell you. You'll laugh.
I won't laugh.
You will. Somebody else laughed when I told her. Somebody laughed, and well, when somebody laughs at me, I don't like it.
All right, easy,
you,
easy, Billy. Come on now. That's better.
I tell you, I got to get 15 bucks. Hey, look at this.
What's that, Billy?
I cut it out of the paper today. I seen it. Hey, you take a look at it, huh? You read what it
all
says.
Right. Mrs. Walter Compton and her husband...
Yeah? Yeah, go on, there's more.
Prominent society leaders of New York will be in town tonight. They're staying at the Lake Shore and...
I can't go there in this crummy rag.
Well, why do you have to see her?
What? Well, I got to tell her something. It's getting late, Randy. I got to get...
I'll lend you the $15, Billy.
You? Oh, no. No, I pay my own way.
Well, pay it back whenever you get a job.
No, I don't want any handouts.
It's just a loan, Billy. It's a loan.
What? Thanks, Randy. You're a champ.
Now, tell me why you got to see her.
You ain't going to laugh? I can take anything but that, anything.
I won't laugh, Billy.
No, I guess you wouldn't. Okay. You remember once I was champ?
Oh, right? Everybody knows you were champ. Now, what about her, Mrs. Compton?
Yeah. Well, it's one night after a fight, see? I ain't champ yet, but I'm punching right up to the top, see? Okay, but this one fight, she ain't there, so I go to see her at her place. She's there. She's there. So what?
Who's there?
It's me, Billy. Where are you?
Yeah, in a minute.
Sure. Hey, I win tonight. I said I win tonight, didn't I?
Yeah, I heard on the radio.
Well?
Well, what?
It don't mean a thing?
Sure. Means a lot, I guess.
You guess? A kid for a dollar who's going to marry the next middleweight champ, you sure take things like a lump of ice.
Yeah.
Edna, anything wrong?
Nope.
Oh, there is.
Okay, something's wrong. Have it your way.
You wasn't at the fight tonight, baby. I looked for you. It took me 3-4 rounds to get going because I didn't see you.
You won.
Kid, look at me.
Sure. The eye got torn open again, huh?
Oh, that's nothing. Collodion fixed it.
Collodion fixes everything, huh? Get cut up, use collodion. That's nice. That puts you all together again. How long do you think you'll stay together?
What's eating on you, honey? The last 2-3 weeks.
The last been... 2-3 weeks. The last 2-3 years!
Yeah, that's right.
I hate it.
You hate what?
Oh, shut up.
Oh, kid, what's wrong?
You and me.
Oh, I don't get it.
The only thing you do get is a measly few bucks for getting your head knocked off.
Oh, I'm a fighter,
honey. So you're
honey.
A fighter. All right, fight. But count me out.
Oh, now, wait a
I've
minute.
I've been waiting. I've been waiting for him to carry you home.
Me? Me?
It can't happen, huh?
Well, all of a sudden, you start blowing your top.
It's not all of a sudden. You said it. You said there was something wrong for the last 2-3 years.
Okay. Okay, spill it.
I'm through, Billy. Washed up. Finished.
What?
You and me. Done.
Since when?
Since right now.
Oh, baby, it's just the eye. You see me this way and you...
The eye.
Don't laugh at me, Edna. Don't laugh at me. I take anything but being laughed at.
It is a laugh.
Oh, now listen,
you listen,
honey.
I don't care if you get punched all over the state. I don't care if you get your brains rattled so hard.
Edna.
It's me I care about from now on.
Okay. So I'll be champ. So you'll get your fur coat.
Not from you. Not from a guy who's beginning to look like a punching bag instead of a man. Look at me. Take a good look.
I am. Yeah, I am.
I got looks. I got class. I can do all right.
I still don't get it.
All right, I'll lay it on the line for you. Want me to?
Go ahead.
I'm not going to tie myself to a punchy character. I'm not going to have to walk in nice places with a guy whose face is... Well, look at her. Go on, take a look in the mirror. You see what I mean?
You want me to quit?
I don't care if you do or not, because it's too late, Billy. It's too late.
Edna, you shouldn't say things. Please, Edna, don't.
That's the way it was, Randy. That's the way it was.
Yeah, I see. Look, Billy, you don't want to go and see her after that.
I tell you, Randy, I got to see her. There's something I got to tell her, and it's got to be tonight because tomorrow she'll be gone.
Billy, how do you know that she'll see you?
Oh, I know, because there's something I ain't told you. There's something I ain't never going to tell nobody. And... Randy, please don't try to stop me. Please don't let nobody try to stop me because if they do, I'll kill them.
You are listening to Nightbeat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
Billy said he'd kill anybody who'd try to stop him from seeing Mrs. Walter Compton. I looked at his scarred face and into his eyes. A wild fever you see in the eyes of a dog everyone says is mad but only wants a drink of water. And then...
I guess I shouldn't have said that, Randy.
Well, let's forget it for a minute, Billy. Now tell me, why do you want to see her?
You don't understand dames, huh?
No, my mother never told me.
Well... She gives me the brush, see, like I tell you. She gives me the brush, but she does it for me, see? She don't want me to get my brains knocked out, see?
Yeah, I'm beginning to see, Billy.
Sure. But me, I got no sense, so I don't see it her way. So I let her walk out, and I don't see her no more. Not until I get hold of that paper today.
And tonight you want to see her. To say what, Billy?
Well, but don't you see? She loves me. All these years, she never lets up. And I want to tell her it's... Okay, that maybe her and me, we can start all over, like, see? What's the matter, Randy?
Nothing. Nothing, Billy. Look, don't let anybody kid you, pal. You're still champion.
Oh, I ain't nothing. But, I gotta go now. I gotta get 15 bucks for a
Now, seat. Look, you're tired. You need a shave. Maybe take a shower. You thought of that?
No.
All right, now you wait here and take a shower and a shave, and I'll bring a suit back for you. Is that a deal?
Oh, gee, You're a champ, Randy. You're a real champ.
I might be gone for a little while, Billy, but when I come back, everything will be okay. Sure. Okay. There was only one thing for me to do, go and see Mrs. Walter Compton. I made sure that Billy couldn't leave my apartment. I locked the door from the outside. I didn't want him picked up before he had the chance to see her. To see the woman around whom he'd built a whole world of fantasy in which he'd lived for so many years. I didn't want that world to come down around his ears. My newspaper pass got me in to see Mrs. Walter Compton in her suite at the lakeshore.
You're Mr. Stone?
Yes, I am, Mrs. Compton.
You're from the newspaper.
Well, I'm not on newspaper business, Mrs. Compton, not tonight. This is more personal.
Really? Well, what can I,
Do for me? Nothing.
Then please get to the point, Mr. Stone. My husband will be here shortly with guests.
How soon?
An hour. Why?
Well, because it concerns someone you used to know.
Really? Who?
Billy Kandel.
Billy Kandel?
Yes, he was better known as Billy the Kid, once middleweight champion of the world.
Oh, I'd forgotten. And I was glad to.
Mrs. Compton, he's coming here tonight to see you.
What? He's coming... How stupid can you get?
Well, for a lot of people, it's not hard to be stupid or heartless.
Yours must be a rather sentimental column, Mr. Stone.
Yes, it's about people.
You better go.
Look, please see Billy. What can you lose?
It's out of the question.
Listen, all he wants is to tell you something. He wants to tell you that he knows that you still love him.
What? Oh, no.
Oh, now listen to me, please. So tomorrow he's going to... Well, he's going where he can rest. He's sick, Mrs. Compton. He's desperately sick.
Let's not be so polite. The word is punch drunk, I believe. You want me to see a lunatic?
No, he's not. And I'll be here when he comes. We'll keep it between us three.
Do you know what you're asking?
Yes, I'm asking you to give a guy a few minutes of his world. Make it real for him. Tell him anything. Tell him you still love him. Then he'll go away. After tomorrow, you'll never see him or hear from him again.
You're asking me to receive that thing and to bring him into this hotel where everyone can see him? You know what that means?
Well, to him, yes.
I'm talking about myself. Myself, Mr. Stone.
Yes, I'd like to get off that subject for a moment.
It's the only subject that matters.
If you don't see him, he'll crack up all the way.
That happened long ago. Good evening, Mr. Stone.
3 minutes of your time.
I said no. Did you hear, Mr. Stone? I said no.
Okay, lady, I'm going. Thank you for everything. It's been lovely.
You needn't be sarcastic, Mr. Stone.
Oh, needn't I be? Look, Queenie, I got a little spot announcement for you. Billy owes you a vote of thanks. He'll never know it, but you gave him the biggest break of his life when you walked out on him years ago.
Oh, really?
Yes, positively. Tonight you're giving him even a bigger break.
Tell me about it, Mr. Stone.
Yes, I'll tell you. The only thing that poor guy's got left is his memory of a girl named Edna. Any resemblance between that memory and you was strictly coincidental. Goodbye. I was glad to get out into the fresh air. All the way back to my apartment, I kept thinking of what I'd tell Billy. How I'd tell him. Then as I walked across the lobby toward the elevator...
Mr. Stone!
What is it, Charlie?
Here's a message for you.
Okay.
Here you are, Mr. Stone.
Thank you. How long ago he leave this?
Oh, what, just a few minutes after you left. Did you know you left him locked in? He called down. He asked me to open the
door.
Yeah,
did he say where he was going?
No, just that he couldn't wait for you any longer.
Oh, that is on the note. How'd he look?
How'd he look?
Well, I mean, anything unusual about him?
No, he had on one of your suits, I remember now. That pinstripe one he must have stolen.
No, he didn't steal anything. Now, listen to me. I'm going to the Lakeshore Hotel. If he comes back here, get in touch with me there. Mrs. Compton's suite.
Mrs. Compton's suite, yes.
Oh, and listen, I think you'd better call the police. But as for Kalski, remember that Kalski?
Kalski.
Tell him to meet me at the Lakeshore Hotel and quick. I took a cab and I took the shortest way to the Lakeshore. I watched the pavements looking for Billy, but I didn't see him. He had some money on him, and he must have taken a cab himself. And then I was back at the Lakeshore talking with the clerk at the desk there.
Yes, sir. There was a man here of that description. He asked that a call be put through to Mrs. Compton's suite.
And was it?
Well, sir, he was a rather... Well,
yes, I know. So he didn't get through.
Oh, I called Mrs. Compton's suite myself and told her. That is, I described the man.
Yes, go ahead. What'd she say?
That on no account was I to put him through or send him upstairs.
Oh, well... Okay, that's something. What did he do then?
He left immediately.
Which way?
Oh, I'm afraid I didn't notice, sir. I was registering some new guests, and I paid no attention.
Okay, thank you very much. I had to find Billy before... Well, before what? What would he do? Where would he go? I asked myself those questions as I walked slowly along, watching for him, hoping to see that pathetic figure in my pinstripe suit, hoping I'd get to him before someone else stopped him. I was afraid of what might happen or could happen. And then I saw him, just past the Lakeshore Hotel, shambling slowly along, his shoulders hunched against the wind that cut in off the lake. I ran and caught up with him.
Billy! Billy!
What? Hi, Randy.
Hi.
What you doing over here?
Oh, I just, looking around. Why'd you leave my apartment?
What? Oh, well, you was gone so long and I had to get going, see?
Oh, sure. Come on, let's walk.
Yeah. Hey, I borrowed one of your suits. It's a real champ suit, all right. You mind, huh?
No, Billy, none at all. Did you see her?
Oh, sure.
What? You did?
I see her.
Billy, they wouldn't let you go up, remember?
Yeah, but I went up the back.
The back, Billy. Now look at me. Are you sure?
Oh, sure. And she still loves me, Randy. I said everything was okay. She's crazy about me like she always was.
What did she tell you?
Well, she didn't want to talk to me. You know how she is. But then I told her I love her, and she loves me.
Yeah? Billy?
I'm tired, Randy. Lots of things happened tonight. Lots of things.
Yeah, I know. What do you say we go someplace for coffee?
Yeah, I'd like that.
I'm awful tired. And when I get real rested good, I'll go back to see her. Her and me, we'll start over again. Hey, this is where she lives, you know?
Yeah.
Look, I got to see her once more, Randy. Maybe she'll talk to me this time.
Not tonight anymore, Billy.
But I want her to talk to me.
Well, I don't...
She will. Yeah, she will. She loves me.
Billy, now listen to me. You let me go up there first. I'll talk to her and fix everything, okay?
Well, tell her not to act like a kid. Tell her to talk to me.
Yes, sure. I'll tell her, but you must put...
Hey, Stone?
Yes, Kolsky?
Put in a call for us?
Oh, yes, I did. It's okay now. I found him.
What'd you call the cops for, Randy?
Oh, Kolsky's not a cop. He's a pal of yours.
Huh?
He thinks you're the greatest fighter that ever lived. He always wanted to talk to you about your big fight.
Oh, sure. But we're busy now. I'll talk to you about it later, Kolsky. I gotta see somebody.
Billy, I promised you I'd see her, remember?
You're gonna tell her I'll be waiting?
Sure. Now, you just stay with Kolsky here. Tell him about the night you won the belt.
Anything the matter, Stone?
No. Just keep him here. I'll answer questions later. Now, Billy.
Yeah?
Promise me you'll stay right here.
You won't stay long, huh? Just tell her she loves me and I want her to talk to me.
Sure, I will. Okay, now you wait here. I didn't think it would do any good to see her again, but I wanted to give Billy a good memory to take along. I saw her all right, but she didn't talk to me either. I went back downstairs and out to the street. I hadn't been gone more than 5 minutes, but they were the longest 5 minutes of my life. Brother, I was beat.
Hey, Rhonda, you see her, huh? You see her?
Yeah, I saw her, Billy.
What does she say? You tell me what she said.
Well, I told her.
Hey, Stone, how long does this go on? This is a prowl car, not a bus.
Yeah, we're coming along with you.
What's the idea?
Get in the back, Billy.
Yeah, I'm kind of tired. I'd kind of like to... Right at your place, Randy.
Sure. Take us to the precinct, Kolsky.
Listen, Randy. Did you see his girl?
Yes, I saw her, but she didn't talk to me either. I guess she laughed once too often. She's dead.
Huh?
All right, now just take it easy, Kolsky. The poor guy doesn't even know that he killed her. A.M. and the lights are going out all over the city. Even those neon signs on Madison Street. I've got to write my piece and put it in the slot, but what can I say? The story of a one-sided love? Well, if that's what love does to you, I'll stick to Pinochle. It's a funny thing about love, isn't it? Let someone get up and talk about hate, and he's hailed as a new leader. Let him speak of love, and he's ridiculed, he's spat upon, and... even nailed to a cross. Love is the greatest thing, the oldest yet the latest thing. Yeah. Copy, boy.
Nightbeat, a new dramatic series, stars Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone. Tonight's story was written by Russell Hughes. Nightbeat is edited by Larry Marcus and directed by Warren Lewis. Music by Frank Worth. The part of the prize fighter was played by Bill Conrad. Others in tonight's cast were Loreen Tuttle, Bill Lally, Larry Dobkin, and Leo Cleary. Frank Lovejoy will next be seen in Milton Sperling's production Rock Bottom, released by Warner Brothers. Listen next week at this same time and every week as Randy Stone searches through the city for the strange stories waiting for him in the darkness. The stories that come out of the shadows to find their way into Nightbeat. There's another great action-packed program you'll enjoy listening to on NBC every Sunday. It's Christopher London with Glenn Ford in the title role. Christopher London was created especially for radio by the world's most widely read mystery writer, Earl Stanley Gardner. You'll truly enjoy this fast-moving mystery adventure series when you tune to NBC next Sunday on most of these same NBC stations. Stay tuned for Brian Donlevy and Dangerous Assignment on NBC.
That's Case Closed for this week. I hope you enjoyed our selections this time. You can find a lot more Marlowe and Nightbeat at RelicRadio.com, where you'll also find past episodes of this podcast and all the others. We have a Shoutcast stream available there as well. And if you'd like to help support it all, our donate button. Your donations make all of this possible. Thank you, as always, to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another hour of old-time radio crime and a brand new episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.